Welcome again to Raise the Standard. I'm Michael Rapp in studio with my wife Jean. We're from Brandywine Flags in the Marchwood Shopping Center in Exton. And our special guest today is Jill Hardy. Jill Hardy is a Gold Star mother. The meaning of that is that she lost her son Brandon in Iraq as a Marine in 2006. Welcome, Jill. I know that you're going to be speaking about Brandon and some of the events that have transpired since his passing. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for allowing me to be here.
Tell us a little bit about Brandon, if you would please.
Sure. Brandon was our first child. He was born on March the 8th, 1981, and he was a 9-pound, 2-ounce, blonde-haired, blue-eyed bundle of joy for my husband, Warren, and I. He was the oldest of four children and took the role of big brother to his sisters, Kristen and Carrie, and his brother, Chad, very seriously. He served as a protector to his sisters and a mentor to his brother. Brandon loved cowboys, country music, hunting, fishing, and Penn State football growing up. He loved to be with people, and his teachers often spoke of his socializing skills to us. Brandon accepted the Lord as his personal Savior at the age of 6. Brandon's last breath on earth was taken in the back seat of a Humvee in Iraq. His very next breath was taken in heaven, where his boots now patrol. Knowing with certainty I will see Brandon again someday gives me the peace that passes all understanding, even on the most painful days. Brandon attended Octorara School District from kindergarten through graduation. He also attended the culinary arts program at the Cap Brandywine Vocational Technical School. Growing up, he had odds and ends jobs at Dutch Way Farm Market, a restaurant, Black Rock Christian Retreat, and he helped a friend from church at his horse stable. Brandon always had a strong work ethic and always helped around the house or gave a helping hand to someone who needed it. During Desert Storm, Brandon would watch the news coverage and decided then, at the age of 10, that he wanted to serve his country in the military. He never doubted or changed that decision as he grew up. Brandon graduated on June the 11th, 1999, and on July 6th, he left for the United States Air Force basic training at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, Texas. He graduated on August 20th, 1999, as a member of the base honor flight. After graduating basic and technical training, he left for his first duty station at Ramstein Air Force Base in Germany. Brandon spent 2 years in Germany and 3 years at Fairchild Air Force Base in Spokane, Washington. While stationed in Germany, Brandon was on the rodeo team, back to his cowboy days, where he rode bulls. He also played soccer and was on the baseball team and traveled to England for a tournament. Brandon was thrilled to be able to welcome in the new millennium at the Eiffel Tower in Paris. And he also felt privileged to be a part of a sword ceremony to honor five-star general John P. Jumper. Brandon left the Air Force after 5 years at the rank of staff sergeant. It took about 6 months to get the paperwork completed for release from the Air Force and enrolled in the Marine Corps. Brandon left for Marine Corps boot camp at Parris Island on January 18, 2005. After a serious bout of double viral pneumonia, causing him to spend 4 days at Beaufort Naval Hospital and 6 weeks in the medical unit on base, during which time he helped other recruits through difficult times of wanting to quit, illness, and injury, encouraging them not to give up. We received a card from one such Marine telling us Brandon helped him through a hard time while they were both in the medical unit. Even while he was sick, Brandon's desire to serve and be a leader was evident to his commanding officers, and he was made platoon guide during his stay there. He was finally able to return to boot camp and endured the rigorous running and training despite the damage to his lungs. It was there Brandon met Derek Cawthorn from New Orleans. The two of them proudly graduated together as United States Marines on June the 3rd, 2005. They weren't stationed together after boot camp, but kept in touch until they were both deployed to Iraq. After Brandon was killed, we knew we had to let Derek know. During our search on how to get in touch with him, we discovered that Derek was buried the day Brandon was killed. Both were killed by an IED in Al Anbar province. When Brandon came home on leave from boot camp, he called me over to where he was sitting at our dining room table looking at his Marine Corps manual. He said, "This is me, Mom. This is what I feel." He wanted me to read it. It said, "I am an American fighting in the armed forces which guard my country and our way of life. I am prepared to give my life in her defense. Little did I know that in less than a year, he would do just that. After combat training at Camp Geiger, he moved on to Camp Pendleton, where he graduated top of the class in the Amphibious Assault Training School. He was crew chief for the Amphibious Assault Vehicles. On his pre-deployment leave in February of 2006, Brandon proposed to his girlfriend, Samantha DeGrazio. They met at church and had been friends for several years before they fell in love. He proposed at a Trace Atkins concert at the American Music Theater in Lancaster. They were to be married in January 2007 upon his return from Iraq. When we said goodbye at the airport on February 9, 2006, we fully expected to see him again, but knew the risk that Brandon was taking to defend the freedom of our country. Brandon and his unit, Charlie Company, 3rd Assault Amphibian Battalion, 1st Marine Division, 1st Marine Expeditionary Force, were deployed to Iraq on March the 27th, 2006. Brandon was stationed in the Haditha Dam area of Al Anbar. While on patrol in the early morning hours of April 28, 2006, the vehicle in which Brandon was a passenger hit an IED. Brandon was killed instantly along with Sergeant Lee Mills from Brookville, Florida, and Sergeant Edward Davis III from Antioch, Illinois.
Wow, that's quite a history. I'm just so sorry for your loss, Jill.
No, thank you. He was an awesome son.
He was. What he initially entered the Air Force. What made him leave the Air Force and then deploy or to then join the Marines?
Brandon signed up for the Air Force the first day of his senior year in high school. And he did his 5 years, but he felt he wasn't doing enough for his country in the Air Force. He wanted to be part of the rigor and dedication and brotherhood of the Marine Corps. He wanted to be on the ground making a difference. Brandon had attained the rank of Staff Sergeant in the Air Force and gave up rank and pay to start over at the bottom. He entered the Marine Corps at the bottom as a recruit. Brandon loved being in the military and served with honor and pride. As a Marine, he finally felt he was doing what he was called to do. He left us a card when he was home on boot camp leave, and in the note it says, "Hey, thanks for everything. I'm glad I got to be home for a while. I don't know when I will be able to get home again. Remember, this isn't the Air Force. You have entered a brand new family. I love the Marine Corps. No matter what happens, I want you to be able to hold your head high and proudly say, that's my boy. Please don't worry about me. I will be fine. Like you've always told me, God has a reason for everything. I love you very much. Thanks again. Private First Class Hardy. Hoorah, Semper Fi."
Jill, I know how difficult that is for you to read that. You've read it, I'm sure, thousands of times in the past, and each time it doesn't make it easier. I know that the loss of a child is the worst thing that can happen to anyone. It's not something that you get over. It's just something that you learn to live with.
But you haven't allowed this to really pull you down. You've risen above the situation, and you're using your pain and your energy to bring everyone's attention to what happened to Brandon and all the other Marines and soldiers that have been killed over there in the Middle East.
You're not the only Gold Star mother, and I know that you're there to support others and try and walk them through this.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How many deployments was Brandon on?
While Brandon was in the Air Force, he was deployed 3 times to the Middle East. He deployed to Saudi Arabia and actually returned home exactly 1 week before September 11th when he was in Saudi Arabia. He was also deployed to Oman and the United Arab Emirates. That was following September 11th. Minor deployment stateside to Alaska and Nevada, which he enjoyed very, very much. His only deployment in the Marine Corps was to Iraq, where he was killed.
So that was his first and only deployment?
It was his first and only as a Marine.
Did you speak with him at all while he was in country?
Yes. We received a phone call from Brandon 3 days before his death. He had taken some higher-ups to Al-Assad and had a few free minutes and some time on his calling card. Brandon always loved kids and was telling me about the kids there. He felt bad because they didn't have much and they always came running up to them while they were out on patrol. The only English they knew was Mr. Give Me and the word chocolate. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they saw them coming, they would be out there saying, Mr. Give Me, Mr. Give Me. They would take whatever they had to give them. I asked Brandon what they gave them and how they got it, and he said they would buy candy, paper, pencils, whatever they could to give the kids. And he told me of one little girl named Raja. He said she had orange highlights in her hair, and he wanted to bring her home with him because of the way in which she was living. He said he took a picture of her, and when Brandon's belongings were returned to us, we found her picture in his camera. Although there were pictures of other children, I knew which one was Raja. We also received a letter from Brandon 4 days after his death. In it, he was telling us of an incident in which his patrol was shot at from a car driving down the street. After he told us not to worry because he had great training, he closed the letter with, "Just remember, that's my job, and I love it. I love you." I carry that letter in my Bible. I know if Brandon were here today, he would say the same as Nathan Hale. I only regret that I have but one life to give for my country.
We're going to take a break now, and we'll be back on the other side of the break to continue our conversation. Welcome back to Raise the Standard. I'm Michael Rapp and my wife Jean in studio with Jill Hardy. Jill, there were other casualties, as you had mentioned previously, in that IED incident. Do you stay in touch with any of those families at all?
We actually do stay in touch. We have one of the gentlemen, Sergeant Edward Davis's father, has joined us on the motorcycle ride that we have for Brandon every year. We stayed in touch with Brandon's friends from both the Air Force and the Marine Corps. There were six men and women he served with in the Air Force that came from all over the United States to attend his funeral. Several others have made trips to Pennsylvania to visit us and to visit Brandon's grave. One of his best friends from the Air Force is particularly close to us. I consider him my adopted son. We text, we call, we stay in touch daily. He comes in from Spokane, Washington every year to the Memorial Motorcycle Ride we have to raise funds for the scholarship we started in Brandon's memory. The ride is always the third Saturday in July, and the past few years we've raised over $10,000 for scholarships for the ride. We stay in touch with both Air Force and Marine Corps friends through Facebook. They tell us they will never forget Brandon. I know these men that were there that night are aching. They relive it. They see it. They tell us of the impact that he has had on their lives. One of the Brandon's friends that he was with that night said that every day he thinks about that night, he sees him in his dreams. He said he's the person he is today because of Brandon, and Brandon will forever be a hero in his eyes, and he will forever live on through all that remember him. They have an acronym, HMD, that they called their vehicle after Brandon was killed, and that's how the guys that were in the Marine Corps remember him. And HMD is for Hardy Mills Davis, and you see it a lot on their Facebook posts.
You had mentioned that after Brandon had been killed, you actually traveled to California to meet the returning unit from the Theater of Engagement, his former unit. Tell us about that.
On October 19th, 2006, Brandon's unit returned from Iraq, and we felt for Brandon, we felt Brandon would want us to be there, and for the guys that were there, we needed to be there for them, so we were there to welcome them home. Brandon spoke often of the bond and the brotherhood of the Marines, and it was during that trip that we understood this bond. The unit arrived late at night after many long hours of traveling from Iraq, and they stood in line to hug us and cry with us over the loss of their friend and brother. At that point, we met Sergeant Lee Mills' family, and we also met the wife of Sergeant Davis. Brandon, along with Sergeant Davis and Mills, gave the ultimate sacrifice. And at the memorial service that was held for them a few days after their unit returned to California, we saw compassion that few will ever witness. Hundreds of Marines in their desert camo paid tribute to three fallen heroes that day. They wept shamelessly as bios were read, personal tributes were paid, and the final roll call was taken and unanswered. They then lined up for 2 hours to kneel at the field cross and hold the helmet or touch the boots or kiss the dog tags of their fallen brothers. These men truly understood the cost of freedom.
That had to be among the most difficult times that you experienced, I'm sure.
It was extremely difficult watching the joyous occasion of troops returning from Iraq, knowing that yours was not going to walk across that parade ground.
And they were in pain also, knowing that those friends and comrades were not with them also.
Absolutely.
So everyone felt the best of things and the worst of things. All the emotions were running through everyone's mind, I'm sure.
Yes.
With that support family in California of the extended family of Marines, I know that you had an extended family of support here with the loss of Brandon. Tell us a little bit about that, Jill.
Our community rallied around us within an hour after we received the news of Brandon's death. It was amazing the amount of people that visited our home that weekend and the amount of support we've had and continue to have to this day. We received the news of Brandon's death on a Friday morning. His body arrived at Dover Air Force Base on Sunday evening. After the autopsy and burial preparations, he was brought home to Chester County on Wednesday morning. His viewing was Thursday evening. He was buried on Friday, May the 5th, 1 week after his death. When Brandon came through Cochranville on his way home from Dover to the funeral home, there were people lining the corner. Our local school bus company brought a bus out with a flag hanging from the window. We asked that they would drive Brandon's body past the school that he attended one last time, and where I currently work, and my coworkers were standing out in support. Yellow ribbons lined the schoolyard. We realized then that that was just a taste of what was to come. The distance from the funeral home to the church where Brandon's viewing and funeral took place is a little over 8 miles. I will never be able to thank our community enough for the support they gave us. They lined the entire 8+ miles, holding flags and signs in honor of Brandon. There were Boy Scout troops, Girl Scout troops, young and old alike, waving flags as we drove by. There were yellow ribbons on the telephone poles and flags lining people's yards all along the way. Fire companies and police departments from all over brought their trucks and vehicles out. We wanted to get out and thank and hug every one of them. Even the funeral director who was driving us said he has never seen anything like it. We were so honored that people took the time and made the effort to show their respect for Brandon's sacrifice. It is something I will never forget. We also had a call from the Patriot Guard asking permission to be at Brandon's funeral. The state police had contacted them because they were told the Westboro Baptist Church protesters were planning on coming. We had never heard of the Patriot Guard before that. I will say these are some of the finest men and women that I have ever had the opportunity to meet. The protesters never came, but this awesome group of men and women on motorcycles formed a path holding flags ready to protect us from these misguided people.
I understand also that President Bush reached out to you.
Yes, I had written a personal letter to former President George W. Bush explaining that Brandon was honored to die for his country. And although the letter was answered, and I'm sure it wasn't personally answered by President Bush, I still needed to tell him personally. I just felt I needed to convey what I know Brandon felt in his honor in serving his country and dying for his country. 6 days before he was scheduled for a visit to Lancaster County for a town hall meeting in October of 2007, I read it in the newspaper. So I called the Lancaster County Chamber of Commerce, who was hosting his meeting, and I told them that I wanted to meet with him. And they told me they would do as they've been requested and pass the information on to the White House. I hadn't told anybody I did it, and I hadn't heard anything, so I assumed it wasn't going to happen. My daughter called me at work the Monday evening before the event, and she said, "Mom, I just got a call from the White House." And I said, "Well, good. Did you get a number so I can call them back?" And so the night before, we made arrangements for my son and my youngest daughter and myself to attend a special guest. We were in the front row. And after the president was finished speaking, we were escorted to a private room. I expected to shake his hand, tell him my son was honored to die for his country, and that would be it. When the door opened, President Bush walked in and shut the door behind him. No Secret Service accompanied him, although we knew they were standing right outside the door. I went to shake his hand. Instead, he hugged me. He held me for a minute, and I looked at him, and he had tears in his eyes, so I said, "I guess you know why we're here." He sat down, put his cowboy boots on the coffee table, put his hand on my shoulder, and said, "Tell me about your son." We had a 25-minute conversation with him. He was genuine, and I did not feel like he was fulfilling an obligation to us. Before we left the room, he looked at me and he said, "I know that it was my decision to put your son in harm's way. I do not take that decision lightly, and I think about it every day." That night, I received a phone call from the White House asking if the visit was okay. I said it was an honor and thanked the person for the president taking his time out to meet with me. The representative responded, "No, the president wanted you to know the honor was all his."
That's incredible, Jill. It's I'm kind of taken back by the fact that that he actually took that time to meet with you. That had to be very comforting to you.
It was an awesome experience for us.
There was the commander in chief thanking the family for the sacrifice, the ultimate sacrifice. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a minute, and we'll continue this conversation. Welcome back. Jill, we were speaking briefly during the break about the genuineness of President Bush in that visit. Tell us a little bit about that.
Since Brandon's death, you learn very quickly the people that say, "Hey, how are you?" and then just want to move on to their day. They say it out of it's the right thing to say. Or the difference between that and, "Hey, how are you? No, I really want to know how you are today." So you learn to notice genuineness in people. And President Bush was genuine when he told me, "Tell me about your son." He never once looked at his watch and said, "Well, I have to catch Air Force One," or, "I've got some vetoes to sign today." He allowed us to talk as long as we wanted to talk. It was an honor to meet with him and to be able to tell him what I felt very strongly Brandon wanted me to say, that he was honored to serve his country and he was even more honored to die for his country. I was sitting alone later that night after in the quietness of the evening, and my Christian faith doesn't allow the ghostly spiritual realm to be strong in my life, but I heard a quiet voice, and it was Brandon's voice, say, "Thanks, Mom." And I believe that instead of the ghostly spiritual things that some people believe in, that was God's voice comforting me and letting me know that Brandon appreciated that the president heard that he was honored to die for his country.
I guess one of the most difficult things also now is the fact that you have a second son who has joined the military. Tell us a little bit about him. That here as a mother, this has to be among the most difficult things that you've ever gone through.
It was not easy. In fact, when we met with President Bush, Chad was along with us on that meeting. And at one point he looked at Chad, and we had told him that Chad was going to be joining the military, and it was that next year. Chad was a junior that year, and Chad knew that he already wanted to be a Marine like his brother. And the president looked at him and said, "You know, I admire you. I admire that you know the results of what can happen, and you are sticking to your decision to join the military anyway." I think the second hardest thing I have ever done was watch my youngest son, my only other son, get on a bus to be deployed to Afghanistan. I truly did not allow myself to believe until his deployment was almost over that he would actually return to us. If things had turned out differently and Chad was returned the same way Brandon was returned, I would not have the passion to talk to the president, that current president, the way I wanted to talk to George W. Bush. I would not have written a letter to President Obama. I would not have wanted to see him. I don't think he would have the same genuineness that President Bush had in my son losing his life.
Going forward from that point, then, you wanted to memorialize Brandon and the men that had fallen, and you are involved directly. You work for the Octorara School District. You are the secretary to Dr. Thomas Newcomb, who is the superintendent. And tell us about the memorial, then, that you spearheaded for the school.
After Brandon's death, several people suggested to Warren and I and to Dr. Newcomb that we put up a memorial at the school for him. And Warren and I told Dr. Newcomb that we didn't want it to just be about Brandon, that he was not the only one who sacrificed his life for his country. We needed to honor others as well. And we established a committee that included some community veterans, and we discussed several options. We decided it should not be outside to cut down on the possibility of vandalism, and it would also be protected from the weather if it was something inside the school building. We decided after several months of talking and thinking that we would include all those who have attended the Octorara School District who were killed in action. There are six plaques honoring those who have paid the price of freedom. There were, I believe, maybe two of them that went to Vietnam before they actually graduated, but we included them because they attended the Octorara School District and would have graduated had not the Vietnam War started. I'd like to read their names because I think it's important that we recognize who they are. From the Vietnam War, our Army Specialist for Ronald Howard Groff was killed on June the 25th, 1967, in Dinh Thang Province, South Vietnam. Army Specialist 5, James Sidney Ridley, killed on May the 11th, 1968, in Binh Dinh Province, South Vietnam. Army Corporal Theodore Raymond Mason, killed on January 7th, 1971, in Long Khan Province, South Vietnam. Marine Corps Private First Class Michael Franklin Sheridan, killed on August 10th, 1969, in Quang Tri Province, South Vietnam. And Army First Class Edward Leroy Folks, killed on July 16th, 1967, in Long An Province, South Vietnam. Along with them is my son, Corporal Brandon Michael Hardy, killed on April 28th, 2006, in Haditha, Al Anbar Province, Iraq. The plaques are a face of these young men. It gives a little bit of information about when they were killed, when they went to Octorara, and where they were killed. I think it's important because we live in a society where highly paid actors and sports stars receive a lot of media coverage, especially if they lose their life, that when a member of the military dies, we don't even hear about it anymore. It doesn't make the daily news. It certainly isn't on the TV. And I want people to know that these men and women are not a statistic. They're not a name. They are a real person who gave their life for their country. They are someone's brother, someone's husband or fiancé, maybe someone's daddy, and certainly someone's friend. I hope and pray that we never have to add more names to this memorial.
The memorial itself is fabulous. It's an alcove that has the helmet, the rifle, and the boots, and the plaques themselves recognize the individuals. Tell us about the announcements to the students prior to Memorial Day.
Prior to Memorial Day, every year we take 6 days to read something, the bios about each one of the men that are in the memorial alcove. We feel that the students that are there need to know that they are more than just a plaque on the wall. The students have been extremely awesome in their respect of the alcove. You see them gathering near it, but you don't ever see them trying to do anything to it. They realize what it's there for, and I appreciate the students of Octorara to be the citizens that they are in respecting what the alcove represents.
This is so foreign to anything that we see today, with all of the protests and schools not allowing the recruitment to take place on their campuses and whatever. Here, you're speaking out to all people, saying these are friends, these are family, these are people that sacrificed for our well-being. And the fact that the students have embraced this and the community has embraced it is incredible. And I just think that this is among the finest things that I've ever seen in a school. And the incredible thing is that next to it is the Constitution on the wall.
Absolutely. I personally believe that Octorara is not the only school district across the nation, obviously, that have lost men in service. And personally, I think there should be a memorial alcove in every school district across the nation.
Well, obviously, that's not going to happen. The people of Octorara are just so special, and I just thank them for embracing this. Several weeks ago, we had Hank Dietering on, who is retired lieutenant colonel. In fact, we're going to be having him on again next week for next week's program. And he spoke of the people in that community, how they have supported so many programs and so many things. And we're going to be taking a break in a minute or two. And when we come back, you're going to speak on being a Gold Star mother and how does that impact the community, and how have you carried forward the support that you've received that you're now passing on to all other families that are suffering this same feeling of grief in the loss of a loved one. So we'll be back in just a second, and we'll continue this on the other side of the break. Welcome back to Raise the Standard. I'm Michael Rapp from Brandywine Flags with my wife Jean, in studio with Jill Hardy. Jill, tell us a little bit, if you would, about the funding and the design of the memorial.
Sure. Steve Wilson, a graduate of Octorara, he actually graduated with my husband Warren, designed the alcove with input from Dr. Newcomb and Warren and I in the committee. The district was doing renovations to the high school at the time, and it was an easy process to incorporate the alcove into the renovation project. The alcove has been paid for by donations from members of the community and businesses. The taxpayers did not pay for the alcove. We had a dedication ceremony of the alcove on November the 20th, 2011, with members of the families being the honored guests.
I would welcome everyone to visit that if possible. Is that open to the public to see that?
It's open to the public in the fact that Octorara School District is a public school. Obviously, in today's society, we have security issues that we need to do. You just need to address the senior high. I would call and tell them that you would like to visit, and you would have to get a badge and be left in the door, and because the doors are locked at all times, and all the security measures that we have to go through. But yes, you could, as the general public, give them a call and say you would like to see the alcove.
That's really great. Tell us now about the Gold Star Mother program and you as a Gold Star Mother.
The Gold Star Mothers Incorporated was formed in the United States shortly after World War I to provide support for mothers who lost sons or daughters in the war. The name came from the custom of families of servicemen hanging a banner called a service flag in the window of their homes. The service flag had a star for each family member that was in the United States Armed Forces. Living servicemen were represented by a blue star, and those who had lost their lives were represented by a gold star. While I'm proud to talk about Brandon and his service and sacrifice to our country, talking about me and my life as a Gold Star mom is a little more difficult. It's hard to put into words the pain of losing Brandon, which thrust me into this unwanted alliance of Gold Star motherhood. In fact, if those words exist, I haven't found them yet. Brandon's life of 25 years, 1 month, and 20 days of awesomeness was ended by a terrorist act. Brandon was in a vehicle, but he didn't die in an accident. He died willingly and proudly serving his country. I knew how Brandon had died, that he was murdered by someone who hated the American way of life. But when we received his death certificate and I read the cause of death was homicide, it still took my breath away. How could my precious son have been a victim of homicide? Homicide happened to other people, people who lived in the city, in a bad neighborhood, or dealt drugs, or were gang members. Not my son, who was a small-town country boy, who played Little League, who listened to country music, who was willingly protecting my freedom and guarding my rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I was not at home when the CACO officers pulled in the driveway to give us the news of Brandon's death, but Warren was, and he knew as soon as they stepped out of their unmarked Suburban the news they were about to deliver to us. No one could ever possibly be prepared for those words. And when Warren came to my workplace and told me those same words, I couldn't comprehend or believe them. This was a mistake. Not my son, not my Brandon. When I asked Warren how they knew it was Brandon, were they sure? Maybe they were wrong. He showed me the photocopy of Brandon's dog tags they gave him when he asked them that same question. I didn't want to tell anyone. Telling would make it real. What if it wasn't true? And maybe, just maybe, if we didn't tell anyone, it wouldn't be true, that it wasn't really happening. Brandon would surely call and say there'd been a terrible mistake. That call never came, but his body did. My son was brought home to me in a flag-draped coffin. As difficult as it was to go through the funeral preparations, having a house full of people for days and the viewing and the funeral, that was the easy part. It's in the quiet of the days since then, after life goes on, when you realize that time will not stand still, that is when the real struggle starts. Then begins the harshness of reality, that death has come to steal away that which was precious to you, and you know he is gone. Grief comes and goes at various levels with each passing day. It is my constant companion. It sometimes is a quiet voice whispering in my ear, and sometimes it's a deafening roar drowning out everything around me. You can't see it, but it's always there. I carry it with me everywhere. To work, where once I was shredding some old student work permits and saw his in the pile. To the grocery store, where I see someone wearing a black cowboy hat. To a walk outside where I once watched him play. To time shared with friends where I sometimes just can't relate to the conversation, and to the quietness of my own heart where I miss him so very much. There is no fix to this grief. It is not an illness that will heal. It will not go away or get better. Whoever said time heals all wounds never lost someone as special as Brandon was to us. It doesn't heal. We just learn to live differently. We've had to learn to live without him. The passage of time will not bring him back. I sometimes still have to process the fact that he is gone. In my quiet moments, I think about him riding in that Humvee, my mother's heart hoping he didn't feel the pain that would have surely racked his body. I look at the picture we received of the Humvee and think about the story as it was told to us by the Marines that were with him that night. I try to imagine how it was. Those young men will never get it out of their mind. Through all the joys in our lives since Brandon's death, and there are many, there is always something missing. A hole that can't be filled. A birthday once celebrated has been replaced with a death where we honor him in a way he wanted. On the Christmas before his death, after the gift opening and breakfast was complete, he made us listen to the song If I Don't Make It Back by Trace Lawrence. The song describes a young man who is about to go to war and tells his friends, if I don't make it back, don't shed a tear for me, have a beer for me. The song ends with his friends having that beer for him, as we do every April 28th. The joy of watching our other children get married without their brother there. The joy of being blessed with four incredibly cute grandchildren that will never know their uncle except for the stories we tell them. All these joys, that have someone missing. I often ask God to hug Brandon for me and to tell him that I love him. That is what brings me joy today. On the day we got the news of Brandon's death, we decided we would honor Brandon's sacrifice and glorify God so that his death would not be meaningless. When I think it's too painful to do one more speech about Brandon or one more motorcycle ride to raise funds for his scholarship, I get myself out of the way and move forward to hopefully honor Brandon, glorify God, and bring awareness and support to our military. Being a Gold Star mother has enabled me to meet people I would not have otherwise met. At the top of the list are all my friends in the military, especially the Marine Corps League. They're an awesome group of people that exemplify the brotherhood of the Marine Corps that Brandon told us so much about. And now we understand. I've had personal meetings with Rick Springfield, who used Brandon's picture in his Christmas song, Christmas With You, a song and video honoring fallen soldiers from the Iraq War. We have met Trace Adkins, who talked about Brandon at his concert at the American Music Theater, and of course my meeting with President George W. Bush. I have also met other Gold Star mothers who understand our pain, and countless vets who never cease to amaze me with their compassion and kindness to us. These are men who have endured the harshness of war in World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, and the Iraq and Afghanistan War on Terror. They respect Gold Star families with an empathy that the general public can't understand. Our respect to them is mutual. My biggest fear as a Gold Star mother is that people will forget Brandon, not the awesome son that we know he was, but what he stood for and what he died for. Hearing people talk about Brandon's life and death has how Brandon's life and death has influenced their life helps ease the pain of not having him with us. Time will not take away my Gold Star mother status, no more than it will heal the ache left in my heart. I will always wear my Gold Star pin with pride and honor for my son who gave his life so others may experience freedom.
The other Gold Star mothers, is there an organization that you're involved with, or how do you communicate with them?
There are Gold Star mothers, I think, in every state across the nation. There are different regional areas that represent Pennsylvania. And although my schedule doesn't allow me to go to all their meetings, they reach out to us whenever they're in this event and ask us to join them in that event.
So this is now another extension of your family.
Absolutely.
That for all the wrong reasons that it's been extended to you, which makes it even more difficult.
Absolutely.
Jill, I wanted to ask you, do you have a website or something that has the information on your the motorcycle ride for Brandon and the scholarship fund and so forth?
Yes, we have a website for Brandon. You could just Google Corporal Brandon Hardy. It's www.corporalbrandonhardy.com. And it tells about the motorcycle ride. The ride was started when my cousin, Chad Miller, his brother, my cousin, Donnie Miller, was killed in an Army helicopter crash on April the 9th, 1986, 20 years prior to Brandon's death. And at that time, I had organized a motorcycle ride to help my family financially, his family, and to show support in their grief. Chad had said he wanted to pay that forward and started a motorcycle ride the first July after Brandon's death. We will be having our 10th ride this year. The ride starts in Gap with the first stop at the Harley-Davidson of Chester Springs. Then on to Hers Foods. They open their tour center to us for a rest stop. We pass Brandon's grave and everybody backs off and pays their respect. And then we return to the firehouse for a catered luncheon. It is 107 miles, and the only time we stop is at the two rest stops.
And what's the date for that this year?
This year is July the 18th. We have police departments and fire companies all along the way that provide support and traffic control. It's an incredible ride. We have had up to 280 motorcycles. That was our largest ride was 280 motorcycles, and the ride enables us to have given $60,000 in scholarships and troop support over the years. People have asked us why we created a scholarship for someone in the military because they get everything anyway. They don't realize that they don't get everything anyway, that there's a lot that they have to pay for, including that first haircut when they step off that bus that gets deducted from their pay. Brandon loved helping others, and he often left behind notes that contained money when he was home on leave just because he wanted to help with something. Brandon was passionate about serving his country, and we knew he would want to help others serving the military. This scholarship allows us to honor his memory while helping others who serve.
It's incredible how people just don't understand. Unless you're involved somehow with the military, or you're a veteran, or you're involved with an active duty member, it's terrible that people would say, well, no, that they get everything. I mean, you look at what is the cost, and your family has paid the ultimate cost. Brandon paid the ultimate cost. There's nothing more that he could give. And this is really enlightening that you're able to reach out and try to heal some of the pain of others, and that you're continuing to serve in his memory so that his death was not in vain. His death is bringing another purpose to your life and to the lives of others that support this. I would encourage everyone to participate in the ride, come out. Even if you don't ride, just come out. It's just a neat thing. Line the highways, line the streets, learn what the route will be.
Just attend the luncheon.
Right, attend the luncheon. Show your respects. Everything from firefighters to law enforcement will line the streets. It's a fabulous day. So we thank you. Again, the website for anyone interested is www.cplbrandonhardy.com, CorporalBrandonHardy.com. Jill, I want to thank you so much for coming in and sharing this. I know that this is a difficult thing, but it's something that you feel very passionately about. I know that your loss is something that we can never really understand, but we thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
We invite you to visit us at Brandywine Flags in the Marchwood Shopping Center in Exton. And for my wife Jean and myself and for Jill, we say thank you for listening, and we hope to have you back next week.